Okay. 31 hours, 32 minutes, and 40 seconds.
Okay.
Okay. This is the Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu class in Radhadesh, on the 11th of February 2013 with Hanaprasad Sakswami, with our students for 5 days, and as part of either the theology degree or the education degree or both.
Theology and religious studies degree.
Okay. Theology and religious studies degree. Okay. And now the secretary will introduce the students.
Yes, I will introduce Maharaj. Hanuman Prasad Maharaj has such an interesting biography.
I don't want to skip
something, so I have a paper, not to forget something interesting. Maharaj studied at University of California, where he graduated in 1970 with a first place prize in psychology.
Yeah.
And minor studies in biology and electrical engineering. Hanuman Prasad Maharaj then proceeded to doctoral studies in Chicago, and in the same time he was participating in the famous Second City Improvisational Theater Group.
Yeah, okay.
And Wikipedia says it was the first improvisational traveling theater group.
Trust Wikipedia.
Yeah. And that was very famous then, theater group, what I noticed. Yeah. And they were also making some films.
Maharaj
became convinced that Western philosophy and knowledge was lacking something, so he got interested in Oriental wisdom. Mm-hmm. And Maharaj's mentor also agreed and headed him towards East. It came an interesting point that Yadananda Maharaj, Hanuman Prasad Maharaj, when he went to the East, he obtained a black belt in karate.
Okinawan.
Okinawan.
When I was, usually almost always, all the schools go white, green, brown, and black. Mm-hmm. And then they can put subdivisions like that, you know. So when I was brown belt, just already to test my black belt, my instructor took me to one side. And he said, okay, you're getting pretty advanced, so now I'm going to teach you the most ancient and the most effective form of self-defense. And it's not manfu or kung fu, it's run fu. Run for your life. This is the most ancient and effective form of self-defense. Run fu. So I'm a past master in the ancient art of run fu. Yes. We'll have glasses here. Yellow belt. Okay, yeah.
Hanuman Prasad Maharaj got initiated by Srila Prabhupada in 1974.
Yeah.
10 years later, he received sannyas initiation. And 10 years later, in 1994, he started to do service as initiating guru.
Yes.
In ISKCON.
In 2004, we started NEOS, North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, a 501c3 federally registered nonprofit educational corporation. Yeah, like that. Yeah. In 2014, I'm going to try and go to Samadhi. My horoscope says 2024, so it's with the body, so we're living our plans.
And Maharaj is associate director of Bhaktivedanta Institute, which...
I was.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we need to... And then Maharaj organized 2 world congresses for the synthesis of science and religion.
I helped organize.
And that was held in Bombay and Calcutta. And there were many famous people, amongst which Dalai Lama and president of World Council of Churches.
Yeah.
And for how long is Maharaj teaching?
This course is 1 week. This course.
No. For how many years?
Since
innumerable.
Since the beginning.
You asked me. We were walking around in Mayapur.
Was it since the beginning? Since we started with Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
So that
means that was the first 3 years we had year one. You must have been the 4th year of the college. This is the 11th year, so calculate. This is the 8th time teaching at the college.
Yeah, yeah.
We're very grateful for that.
Okay. I got different gifts. I'm also now a professor. Causas at Honoris?
Honoris Causa?
Yeah, yeah. The Ricardo Palma University. It's kind of like you put everything simply like that. I'm currently a professor there. It was kind of, makes everything simple. Which I don't know how it fits into your qualification system with Chester and stuff like that. But actually, yeah. And it's been one of the best universities in Peru. Like that. And that's because of the Institute for Oriental and Occidental Classical Studies, Divya Bhani. She has 5 doctorates, everything else like that. So she started this whole program there, which includes all these cultures. So, yeah, okay. So we recorded this for...
So for the recording, Governor Lila was supposed to contact Radaseva, but didn't do. Did she contact you? No. She told me, I'll ask Radaseva, but she didn't. So we're lucky Maharaj has a recorder. Maybe today we do like this, and tomorrow, can you get a recorder? Maharaj wants that we record.
As many, he records his classes. Yeah. Can you ask Katie?
Yeah. Okay. And a little bar is going up, and when you're talking, it was going up, so I guess we're recording anything with that. Okay. Let's see. I guess at the end of the class, you can put your mark here. Not before the end of the class. You survive all the way. I didn't die before. I'm sorry. It's a democracy mark, right? He died before he got his PhD. I'm sorry. No, it wasn't. They would try to give him a posthumous PhD, and then they said they couldn't do it. If you die before you finish, it's too bad. Okay, it's not an excuse. Death. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, so we're a little late starting. So what we're doing is chanting Sarvaswami Astaka. It's a very nice program. And what do we got here? But we can start tomorrow. We can do 2 verses a day. When we start tomorrow, that will be 8 verses in 4 days. So, now, okay. Like I said, we've been doing this a long time, so it's kind of got developed here, and we haven't got it. Let me show you this. What I have here is the seminar Nectar of Devotion 2, because Nectar of Devotion 1 we classify as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, part for Bhakti Shastri. Yeah, that part. So this part, we're kind of going to the southern part. We had a big discussion yesterday with many passions, professors screaming and yelling at each other. not quite. But I'll never come back ever again, so I'll never teach ever again. We had some of those going on. Excuse me, I'm sorry, okay. About what the actual curriculum is supposed to be and everything like that. Because one side is we're doing something which matches up with the external academic world. The other side is we want to teach our books and some of us, in between there, where you wash anything. Neither hot nor cold, A little bit of everything. So, it's nice because then Bhakti Bhai Bhava, Prabhupada had this whole curriculum like that, which is the first 6 cantos. But we're including the way we're teaching it, also the other books too. Our idea of education is that it's spiral, One idea is kind of this German idea that first you learn A, then you learn B, then you learn C, then you learn D. Okay, like that. So, but ours is more like first you hear you're not the body. Okay, then in Canto 4 you also start you're not the body. Then Chaitanya-charitamrita, you're not the body. So the same things are again and again like that. But each time, higher, more intense like that. You see Prabhupada quoting Bhagavad Gita again and again. Right, in the purports to the most advanced texts like that. So we've kind of organized our seminar on that basis too, that we're going ahead now to the southern part, the Nectar of Devotion. And then we're going to also review things. So the course, we would call this D2. And this is actually the study materials that we use for the course in Texas, like that. And our thing too is, why are we learning, to teach? There's one joke. Why do universities exist? so teachers can learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shravanam Kirtanam. Yeah, when you hear it, you repeat it. And the first level of Smaranam is intellectual understanding. You see, this is the, what's it called? Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, the seventh canto. It probably explains that. When you go through, you put it in a Gyan platform. Well, this is like that, this is like this. I heard this. Yeah, but it's not this one continuous file now. There were three parts to that, and this part is actually a repetition of that. That's Gyana, you know. But that's the first level of Smaranam. You know, when you hear, you repeat it like a parrot. But then you start to understand it, you know. And that's actually the beginning of contemplation, meditation. Then it actually becomes more fluid, you know, like that and so on, until finally it becomes perfection. You get out of the material world. Right? No more punar janma when you perfect Smaranam. Hearing, perfect that, you can talk, shravanam, when you can talk, then you can contemplate, and then, oh, this is the third one, if you perfect that, then no more repeated birth and death, right? Mm-hmm. We're all going to take birth, we're all going to rotate one seat. I'll become you, you become her, you become her. Here we are. Oh my God. Yes, yes, okay, this is a little impetus here, why we're studying. We want to get out of this world. I don't like snow. Yeah, I wish you were a snowman. Okay, teaching, that's the thing, is that we're hearing so we can teach, right? Actually, this is my last year, I want to teach this. Next year, I want to be an advisor and come and have somebody else teach it, like that. Yes, I'll come as an advisor and give hints like that. Yeah, this is the way it should be. Okay. We've been teaching it here. And every place we go, then actually that's the idea, because we can't cover everything in 5-15 hours. You know, it's not going to cover all this stuff. But we hope to give a perspective on the literature, what's available, an appreciation for it, that people realize the value of it and stuff like that. You know. And then you can teach it in different places like that. During Bhagavatam classes or something, you can explain something or expanded, the way we're teaching it, it'll be a fully accepted presentation on world philosophy, and especially in drama classes. I would say every university in the world that has a regular drama department has one class on world theater, like that. And so then of course they'll cover Indian theater, like that. It's just guaranteed. You know? And usually they cover. Who do they cover? Who do you think they cover in terms of world drama from India?
From India?
Yeah.
And Kalidas?
Yeah, Kalidas, yeah. And then other people, they just don't know. Actually, almost always they are not at all experts. So you come in with this course, they'll just, okay, go ahead, you know much more than we do. And then it's very respected. And then, of course, it's a bridge, you know, right to our literature then. You know, because once that, so draw, anyway, so this is kind of summary. Let's see, how are we going to do this? I have all the material in one place here, but I haven't got it all. I was trying to do a reader and get it all printed out and stuff like that, but it's just like, you know, my schedule, you know, my stupidity, everything else. Let's say maybe we're like 75% Krishna conscious. Okay, so 25%, every fourth beat is stupidity. So like that, so I have to work on three out of four cylinders. Yeah. I still, right now, for example, I'll tell you right now, my stupidity right now is I just cannot become Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. So what I do is try to dovetail it with something. So right now, what I'm doing right now, I'm dovetailing with Joan of Arc. Right? You know her? Ever heard of, okay, I can say Joan d'Arc? That's a French pronunciation. You don't know her? You know her?
Yeah, I mean her.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, it's not bad. She did this. It's drama. France was... In the Civil War, the British were taking over the whole place. Everybody was being harassed. You know, they go to villages, kill people, everything else. So she grew up in this environment. And she had this, if we take the internal view, then God came to her and said, you're supposed to deliver France from the hands of the enemies and return it to God. You know?
Yeah.
So then this, other people look at it. She was overly hormone-stimulated 10-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl who was having hallucinations. It's like, you know, you got your views of history and like that. Personally, it's really miserable, that one. You know, God, it's like, so, you know. But the other one, that the whole thing was actually a real experience and everything else is like, so the movie, which is, you know, what we're into, that's the whole thing. This justifies watching movies. Like that. But it's a whole thing that is, it is, the whole thing is, goes through as a spiritual experience all the way through like that. And it's really incredible. And good actresses and stuff like that. The guy, one point she has to attack Orleans, you know, with her soldiers and everything else. It's really well done, very good movie. And the battles and everything else, very well done like that. So in the trailer, you can look it up there, Dustin Hoffman, he was where I was, you know, he graduated from Northwestern also and became like one of the best actors in the world, like the history of the world. So at one point, she's finally capture her and they're you know, challenging her, like they're trying to get her on, you know, this, everything else like that. So in the trailer, this whole battle of Orleans, she gets shot with an arrow and everything else breaks it off, pulls it up like that. So they cut him with Dustin Hoffman very quickly going, that was too easy. Yeah, because then he goes after her faith like that and tries to, you know, make her think that maybe everything was just an hallucination. I never saw God, everything else. And then it's like, you know, heavy, you know, so on. So he plays the devil to the perfection like that. And so not like evil, but just like in your mind, just this, you know, questions you have, maybe there is no Krishna, like that, so on. Anyway, so in the midst of all this, trying to organize all my work, everything else, I never got a reader together. So I have all the material here, like that. So if anybody has any thumb drives, everything else, we can transfer it. What I'll be using basically for my stimulus here is this thing we did in Vietnam. Because we haven't got so many students, we don't deserve a projector. I guess everybody can see this. Page down, okay. Introduction, everything else, calendar. And basically I'm saying this is a program we did in Rotterdam. So it worked very, very well. It was in Houston, Texas. And they were thinking about starting a Bhakti Bhai Bhava program. They did an extra Bhakti Shastri and it kind of fell apart after that. Brihat Murdunga was supposed to take charge of it, the Mayapur Institute, but it was too far away, everything else. And so, you know, kind of fell apart. So we got involved with it from our perspective, and now we're starting to, you know, teach it. And actually, finally, after 2 years, we got it all organized. We dealt with all the internal politics of people being, you know, improperly situated. And finally, when we started, we had 24 Bhakti Bhai Bhava students, you know, which is, you know, it's just, but that's, you know, because they're all waiting. The professionals, very intelligent. You know, Houston's right in the middle of, you know, the United States like that. So, and the kind of like the impetus for the people to sign up and do it, everything else, was a seminar. And they'd never done anything like this before. So we did it like in the evenings, you know, and we organized it so that it was compatible like that with the study materials, just like we do here, like an accredited course. And they were just intoxicated with it in the end, you know, because they had all bachelor's degrees minimum, bachelor's degrees, and it was just like, wow, we could study things and it's just so, the result's so nice. You get a real understanding of things and so on, you know. So it works very well as also like a seminar, you know, with a community like that. You don't have to go to live someplace, everything else like that. And the content's incredible, your whole Krishna consciousness. If you listen carefully, when you come out of this, you'll be a different person. Okay. It is changing. So this is a summer we did. We had an introduction basically saying this is a course we did in Radhadesh. We did a calendar. Okay. And the content. Okay. We divide the content into five areas here. Which, why not? Now I'll use all right up here. What's first? Black is first. Okay. Yeah. Black first or blue? No, blue first. Okay. Yeah. Black is little emphasis and red is for heavy emphasis. Okay. So we got 5 days. Okay. So first, let's do introduction to the course, which we're doing right now. Okay. Course. If I misspell course, I don't know. Okay. And David Haberman. Okay. And I think this is going to roughly fit 1 day like that. Then second, then, I think what I put was... yeah, okay. Overview, okay, of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Review, okay, of the East. Okay, Because how many people have their bhakti shastri degrees? Raise your right hand.
Not me.
Okay. So you're going to get it right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I that's actually a kind of a prerequisite. We're discussing this whole thing yesterday, too, with the whole curriculum thing, how to develop the curriculum. Because actually, Bhakti Shastri is like the probably described like a high school diploma. And this is a university thing, so you should have finished that, you know. Basically, you should have finished, I guess, Bhakti Shastri by the time you're 16 years old. And you should be finished Bhakti Bhai Bhava by the time you're 25 years old. And by the time maybe you're like 30, you'd be Bhakti Vedanta. Okay, so if you're living the discount of the future, like that. And you can start specializing. You know, so but that means every village, there'll be Paramahamsas in every village, like that. Ah, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. This one guy, mentioned him, Weiss. He's the guy who does past life regressions. He also is doing future life projections now, which according to our philosophy is quite possible because people's karma is already fixed. His thing is, about 100 years from now, he doesn't do less than that because he doesn't want to get into people like, you know, predicting what's going to happen, whether we're going to win the lottery or that kind of stuff. Yeah. Things are going to be just about the same. You know, no better, no worse, you know, in terms of the pollution and everything else. But we will expand it into trying to exploit the ocean in terms of agriculture and, you know, making algae burgers and that kind of stuff, whatever it takes. But then, about 1,000 years in the future, the whole world, the population will reduce and everything will be so nice and friendly and peaceful. So you're kind of like trying to figure out what happened in between, you know, like that, so on. But that's, you know, matches our projection too. And then, yeah, then a Paramahamsa in every village, and, you know, you haven't got to have a sannyasi as a guru, you have somebody who lives there, you know, with you. Okay. So anyway, eastern part, we'll go review the eastern part, which is the Bhakti Shastri level. And then, third day here, we can do an overview. Oh, we are, okay, south, okay, which is Bhava Bhakti, okay, and then fourth day, details, okay, because the focus is really going to be the southern part, which is Bhava Bhakti, like that, details, south, okay, and then five, modern application. Okay. And the idea is we can meet in the mornings, discuss everything, and in the afternoon there's time to read. You have classes in the afternoon? Okay, I think so. It's good, yeah. And read the materials, and the next day we can discuss like that. Okay. So, this is what we're trying to do here. Now, let's try and... It's called a flip chart, right? Probably won't flip. Okay. So, introduction. What kind of materials are available? Books are the basis, right? Yeah, okay. So for books we got, what's first? Why not? Okay. Nectar of Devotion of Srila Prabhupada. Nectar of Devotion, we've already done like Upadeshamrita. And the way we're describing in our classes in the evening, Upadeshamrita, have we got Nectar of Devotion here? I don't see it. It's amazing. What kind of library is this?
You're up there, no?
Huh? Doesn't look like it.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, it's not there. Let's just say over here, the small red and green volume on the left, on the bottom. What is that?
Srimad Bhagavatam?
No. The very, next to the next to Lotus Feet. Right there.
What is that? Prabhupada something. I think it's Krishna.
Huh?
It's in...
The classics of India, but on the back is Bhagavan's. This is third camera, second part. Okay, like that. Yeah. Okay, we haven't got it. Okay, we'll work on it. So Nectar of Instruction is like an introduction. You know, Prabhupada says, it constitutes first instructions for neophyte devotees. But it goes all the way from, you know, who are we, Gaudiya Vaishnava, become a guru, associate with devotees, Radha Kund, you know. So that's neophyte devotees, you know. Well, yes, neophyte in the sense, actually, the purports to the Radhakund sections are very small. Not much explanation for that. But there's an overview of everything. And it's a fantastic book, like we've been saying. If you just follow the citations that Prabhupada makes, it'll give you like a complete, detailed study of all of Prabhupada's books. I was trying to study all of Prabhupada's books. Actually, we have one video, one PowerPoint show called The Bhaktivedanta Library. And you go through, all of Prabhupada's books, starting off organized, okay. Isopanishad, Vedas, okay. Bhagavad Gita, Gita Upanishad, okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the heart. Then Krishna book, the teachings of the life of Lord Chaitanya, it's all there.
Queen Kunti.
Yeah, those topical ones, yeah, teachings of. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is basically a Srimad Bhagavatam class. Lord Chaitanya is showing us how to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, like that, citations, demonstration. And then from that we have the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is an extract of five dialogues with different people. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya. And then Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is like the summary of everything. It's just like most of Chaitanya, most of Srimad Bhagavatam is Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma. It's how to be a lady, how to be a kshatriya, how to do this, but spiritualize it. But the Rupa Goswami extracts out just the pure, bhakti. So it's kind of like you get the tourist path and you got the accelerated path. So, and David Haberman says the same thing. It's like a summary extract of intense summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Upadeshamrita is just a summary of the whole thing like that. So Upadeshamrita, introduction. So altogether, and then also then there's like 32 volumes of room conversations, 7 volumes of Bhagavad Gita lectures, 8 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam lectures, 7 volumes of letters. So some people, devotees in the United States have all these, So you sit there and give me this thing, you put them in front of you like that, and it's more and more like terrifying. And so then I usually say, and some people say that Prabhupada didn't give you everything, So one guy said, thank God. it is. So I was trying to, understand everything. And then what Prabhupada says one time, no disciple can take everything the spiritual master is offering. Like that. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Another time he says, even in 100 years, you cannot study all these books thoroughly. So one thing we're trying to do is get an overview, right? Get a survey of what's available. And then you keep your notes, remember stuff. And you start to develop your logical relationship with Prabhupada's books. Yeah, this is for me. From the very beginning, I was pushed by the super soul, everything else, to explain Sankhya in terms of, other people, they get into the details of Bhaktivedanta Institute and they argue with scientists and they fill, nothing but, Greek, Latin, Greek characters with equations and everything else like that. Sadhaputta would do that. He would give these lectures that were incomprehensible to anybody but somebody who was a postdoctorate like that. It's a whole arcane language. But my thing is to explain it so basically somebody with a college degree or that kind of level can understand Sankhya and stuff like that. And other things too. So that's my I'm really good at that. Many people say that you're good at that. But other stuff, no, I'm not good at the hard stuff. My mentality is not. To be a scientist, you've got to be extremely narrow-minded. Science means to focus, a PhD means you focus on one thing, right? Going to focus on Tulasi here, okay? Going to focus on our nose, going to focus on our nose ring, going to focus on a little, what we call a burnished part on the nose ring. That's my PhD thesis. That's what it means, nobody but maybe 5 people in the world know what you're talking about. Really, really like that, so on. So that's, Bhagavad Gita defines that kind of knowledge as knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Yeah, ignorance. One thing all in all like that. It's very wonderful. So science really, and the big scientists actually aren't like that. They're very kind of broad thinkers and stuff. We work with the Nobel laureates and stuff. And they have some perspective on things. And many times they have their philosophy, which sometimes is a little unusual because they're not philosophers. But at least they have one. Sometimes it's nice. Okay. So nectar of instruction is like a whole little summary like that. It's a nice way to look at Prabhupada's books, and then because it covers everything like that, so on. And then Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava are demonstrations. Introduction, complete science of devotional service. And in Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami is showing us in these dramas how all these mellows and rasas work together to create, you know, the bhava like that. So, nectar of devotion, and then supplementary nectar of instruction. Then, you know, Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, you know. So they're there. Then I would say next resource we really have is what is that?
Trishanashatalita?
Yeah.
It's Sanatana Rupa Goswami.
Yeah, Majalila. Yeah. And chapter 19. And you'll see this. This is Rupa Shiksha. It's the instructions to Rupa Goswami. And it has a special name like that, Rupa Shiksha. Then after that, there's four chapters, Sanatana Shiksha. And the first part is like, you know, kind of history, where it was going on, everything else like that. But about halfway through, it's in the instructions to Rupa Goswami. And those are in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's the first one like that. So Prabhupada, you know, pulled it out. And you see Prabhupada paraphrasing it again and again, again and again. In the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita, what are the four nutshell verses of Bhagavad Gita?
Natural.
Huh?
Natural.
Yeah.
Chapter Shloki.
Huh?
Chapter Shloki.
The Bhagavad Gita.
From 10:8 to 12.
Yeah, yeah. It's very easy to remember the verse numbers. It's 108. 10:8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam. Actually, if you just memorize those four verses and know them, you'll always be able to quote from Shastra to support your position. And it's most likely that most people will never notice that you're using the same four verses like that. You know, eventually somebody might, you know, but it's just, those four verses, they include everything. So in there, Prabhupada quotes, you know, teachings of Rupa Goswami, like that. So, Shiksha. And Prabhupada says this became the basis for Bhakti Rasa Vida Sindhu, like that, after devotion. Because he goes through all the things like that. And as he starts to get into the more advanced topics, you can see in the purports Prabhupada is quoting, you know, quoting the Bhakti Rasa Vida Sindhu verse, which exactly matches up with what, you know, is there. Okay. Nectar of Devotion is Prabhupada's translation. Bhakti Rasa Vida Sindhu is the original title. And okay, I'll get that later. What else we got? Resource materials. Okay. Also, cc.3.1, which is a later meeting of Lord Chaitanya with Rupa Goswami. And they met back in Vrindavan. And that describes basically how the Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, you know, were written. Lord Chaitanya is he's starting to compose it, and then they're talking about the content and the purports. There's one purport there where Prabhupada gives like the history and everything else, and I think it took about, I can't remember what it was at least like 15 years to compose it, at least 15 years to compose it, you know. And it's a very, you know, for example, in Spanish is one joke, how many stars is Spanish? No, okay. How many stars are there in the sky? That's the question. The answer is 50. That's funny, isn't it? That's no meaning in English. Quantas, you know, quantity. Quantas estrellas, I, there are, en el cielo, you know, in the sky. 50. 50 means 50. But also it means you break it. Sin means without. Cuenta, count. Like that. Without count. So, you know, so even Spanish people, oh, very funny, you know. So it's a funny joke in Spanish, but in English it has absolutely no meaning. So if you try and translate Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, here is a gopi, you know, trying to produce a drama glorifying Radha and Krishna's pastimes, who's one of the greatest Sanskritists who ever lived, and we're going to translate this into English. It's like Krishna says something so that Satyabhama will interpret it one way, that you're the greatest, Rukmini will interpret it, so she's the greatest. That Krishna's a very clever fellow. and then Purnamasi comes in, and she understands he's talking about the weather like that. So Krishna keeps everybody like that, in a position like that, you know, so on. So then you've got to translate this, right? You know, and then even if you understand what's happening, the subtle nuances of poetics and grammar and everything else, then to try and get those into English language, you know, forget it. We tried to translate. We have one PowerPoint show on Hamlet and Arjuna, and the comparison is incredible. Not the superficial; the actual basic problem in philosophy is the same. And it's you know, oh boy, we started off with a quote from Romeo and Juliet. In fair Verona, where we lay our scene, two families both alike in dignity, from ancient grudge, set forth to new mutiny. And civil blood makes civil hands unclean. Okay, try and translate that into Spanish. Like that. Okay. So we did this for like a PowerPoint show. And the devotee was helping me, one disciple. He has a master's degree in Spanish, literature, everything else. He was a monk. And we were asking professors from our university. It was a good university. And he was referring us to these old bookstores and everything else. And it was not a good translation. People would just Hamlet. People would just drop phrases, or they get, you know, weird translations. So finally, we were doing it ourselves. It took us like about 2 weeks to translate, basically about, you know, 4 or 5 pages of PowerPoint shows. And we did it. The university people who was, you know, teaching English and stuff like that, everything else, they were saying, "Wow, best PowerPoint you've ever seen," and so on. But it's a job. You know, just putting it from you know, English into Spanish, or to speak the Sanskrit. So. Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, and there's a little nice discussion there. What else? Rupa Shiksha. I'm going to get notes for that. Yeah, but that's just Rupa Shiksha. Yeah, it's the same thing. But it might be a little different like that in terms of Prabhupada summarizing it. That's why teaching so much time is so. I just love to distribute it to professors because it's 5 dialogues, so it's like little conversations. It's not something from, you know, when Krishna's fighting with a snake with a million heads or something. It's something that happened historically, and each one's a little different. So you kind of read it like, you know, I write a little bit of an introduction like that, which shows how to look at it, the different sections. But the thing about it is that it's just Prabhupada summarizing everything, and it's because Prabhupada's language is so intense. You know, Prabhupada's experiencing these things, so it's just like he puts it like that, you know. So it is. It's very nice. You know, very nice book. Okay. What do we got? That's the calendar. Okay. Nectar of Devotion, which is available online from Vedabase.com. Okay. Okay, the next what I have here, I'm going to do it systematically, is okay. Can you guess what that is?
Ways of Devotion.
Yeah? Dhanadara Swami. Yeah. And what he has is very nice work. He goes through the Nectar of Devotion, and he writes like a book, which is what I want to do for extra instruction. He goes through, he matches it up like that. You know, boy, it's kind of hard because Prabhupada's chapters are kind of corresponding to the original chapter breaks in Rupa Goswami's original divisions like that. And sometimes they don't, or I think basically, the actual Nectar of Devotion is just basically all the chapter titles. I don't know if it breaks into the waves or not. In the back there, something like that. But it is, it's an extremely analytical book, extremely systematic like that, you know, to match the time. So his is like, you know, for what we'll get into when we get into the other parts like that, really to understand the Nectar of Devotion, I couldn't understand it. I go through parts of it like that, but the whole structure, everything else, the content was so difficult. And we, after many of our temples after Mangalarti, they read Nectar of Devotion, is just like, it's just incomprehensible. People just giving something, and then Radharani blinked her eyes, and, you know, Krishna understood, I thought of this, you know, it's just like, okay, finished, okay. You know, it has a whole meaning like that. There's a certain reason why it's there, you know. So, his book goes through, it's this wonderful, you know, wonderful contribution. There's a couple of mistakes in the graphics. You know, really, without the graphs, it's very difficult to understand. Because an Nectar of Instruction is devotion is an extremely analytical book. And so Prabhupada says this can be divided into two or three parts, which can be divided into so and so. But Prabhupada means that the third part can be divided into so and so. And it's just, without the actual physical graphs in front of you, it's just very difficult to follow this. Yeah. And then some of the words are Prabhupada's translating in a way which, until I explained, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, for example, like as ago, something about how it's talking about devotional service and practice or something like that, you know. But as being a part of bhava bhakti. But that's not a part of bhava bhakti, it's part of the beginning of the sadhana bhakti. But then he said the word is not the same word as used here. It's a different word which means, you know, how it's practically done practically, practically manifests itself, which is bhava bhakti. Okay, so his book is wonderful, and especially when we get into the thesis, the paper, okay, hang on, calm down. Paper will have like almost every day will be one aspect of it like that. You take your notes and everything. But actually, what we did before was on Saturday, we required to turn the paper on Saturday. Every day you write. At the end of the thing, it's all finished, you turn it in. You know, everybody complained about that, howling and complaining. So what happens, I think it's within a certain number of weeks after the thing, and by then I'm already in Australia or something, I get the thing and I have to grade the things and everything else. Like that. Yeah. There's Snoopy, Charlie Brown. If he's you know him here, you know Snoopy, the dog. Okay. He was become a great writer, you know. So he was he and Lucy, they were writing all these things and submitting them, you know. And they got rejection notices, you know, so on. Jack London, you know him, American famous author. Here's one thing about reincarnation, which is nice. He papered his wall with rejection notices, completely covered his wall with rejection notices like that. Another one was Zane Grey. Zane Grey, you don't know also. He's an American author. He writes historical novels, especially like, you know, Western novels and stuff. But he goes and researches the whole thing. So when you got the novel, you actually got a real experience of what's happening. So he got his first rejection by an author, and he walked out and almost vomited and fell on the ground in New York City like that, because it was hitting so intensely. He just had to hold onto the fence and breathing, and everything was blacking out. And finally, all I could experience was the steel French thing like that. And he said, there's something in him. He said, no, I can write. You know? So, okay, try again. So rejection notices. And then finally, nobody in the history of the world has written more books than he has, like that, so on. But he got rejected. You know? So during the process, I think Snoopy sent his manuscript, the dog, right, to some Chinese publishers, and they sent a Chinese rejection notice, which is, "Oh, Mr. Dog, we have read your book, and it includes everything that is deep and profound about life and love, you know, this and that. But we must admit our cowardice." Because if we published your book, we would never be able to publish anything equal to it in the future, and we'd have to close the doors of our publishing house out of shame. Therefore, we are rejecting your wonderful book. So when I grade your papers, I have to say, because your paper is so wonderful, everything else, this and that, you have a lot of future, but actually, so on. Radhika, he's my teacher. I mean, I'm actually his assistant. He says, no, it's a strange thing because he says it's bizarre because, you know, at the end you're going to have to do this thing and put this black mask on and chop people's heads off, you know. So in the class, you're always kind of like remembering, like, don't get too close to the students, you know, because in the end you're going to have to be this guy. And the other alternative is somebody else grades them, which he says what he does is one person administers the class, one person teaches it, and one person does a grading like that evaluation. And it's like, in terms of workload. Because he has like, I think 25 people in two groups like that. So maybe 50 students each semester. Like that. So it's impossible to do all of it. Okay, Dhananjaya Swami will use that especially in general, but especially when we go to the southern part, because he gives these explanations and stuff like that, so the paper and the thesis. Okay, what else we got? Okay. We got David Haberman here. Yeah, we haven't got him. Okay. David Haberman. Okay. he has a full translation. I will discuss him today. And his introduction is what we use like that, because his introduction is a fantastic summary of the history and everything else like that. Then as like a very deep thing we have, okay, what's your resume to Sindhu translated by? Bhadu Swami. Right? Oh. It's just in the library here. It's two big volumes. They both have a full translation, but David Haberman, on the left-hand side of the page, he has the original text of Devanagari. You know, the Sanskrit, not transliterated, but the original Devanagari characters. So, you know, I mean, almost nobody can read it, you know, like that. Stupid. At least could have done my transliteration. The right side of the page, and he has then his translation. Then as end notes, he has Jiva Goswami's commentary and Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary. Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary, as far as I know, maybe it's two of them, but only one. And it's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, which is the daughter, like that. So it's a very small commentary. But Jiva Goswami's commentary is quite extensive. I don't know how it's even as big as the book, even like that. And so my uncle has done a wonderful job, but these are very complicated topics, and so therefore. So Jiva Goswami's commentary. So they have their commentary by, you know, Jiva Goswami. Now what Bhadu Swami does, he has a transliteration, so you can read the text. He doesn't have word for word like that, but he has translation. And then right there, he has the commentary right there, because David Haberman is this thing of like, you know, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, like that. You know? And so they're both good, they really are, but Bhadu Swami is in some ways, I would say, a little better just because of the way it's organized and stuff like that. You know? We gave a cut to our friend Dr. Samresh Bandopadhyaya, former dean, director, president, vice president, what do you call it, head of the Department of Ancient Indian Culture and History at Calcutta University, studying Sanskrit from like 6 years old or something, you know. Very nice person. So I gave him the Bhadu Swami's thing. He's okay. And then after about 2 years, he said, oh, Hanuman Swami, it was very nice, you know. And he said a couple of points he missed because he didn't grow up in the culture exactly like that. So, but he said, other than that, it's a very good translation like that. So very, you know, solid translation like that. Because you're looking, sometimes you're looking at specific verses and stuff like that, you know. What else we got? About it. Oh, yeah, okay. Then the modern theater, then we got improvisation for the theater, okay, by Viola Spolin. Okay. Now, I think this is in the library. I have a PDF copy of the of an older edition. I think the new edition is there. Improvisation for the theater. And also we have the Encyclopedia Britannica articles on Konstantin Stanislavski, like that. He's one of the biggest founders of theater. He's one of the, you know, the acharyas in modern theater and how it works.
Can I use Russian resources? I'm sure we have. Stanislavski, I'm sure we're some Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure we have quite some books.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like the acharya for most modern theater. He's like, I would say there's almost nobody in modern theater who doesn't, I would say nobody, nobody in modern theater who doesn't, Stanislavski doesn't fit in as a prominent person. To some people, he's the acharya for what is rasa, what is theater, and theater theory. All the people you see, all the actors, all everything else is influenced by him, like that. So anyway, we have an Encyclopedia Britannica article, which I extracted, because unless you pay $50 a year, you can't get the full article. Actually, as a scholar and everything else preaching, it's worth the $50 a year. Because the Britannica, the Wikipedia, I know professors, the second you quote the Wikipedia in the paper, they fail it automatically. One quotation with the Wikipedia, finished. You know. But they ask the Britannica is scholars, and the articles are written by scholars. You know, it's not like a peer-reviewed journal, but they have some good standard. And so Radhika says, yeah, it's accepted. You know, you should probably even say who wrote the article. But it's accepted in scholarly circles as being a bona fide, you know, source of reference. And many good articles. And I had to do a thing on Bhagavad Gita as poetry. So I looked at the article in poetry in the Britannica. And it was written by the poet laureate of the United States of America. And it was a really good article, you know, about poetry and what it is and everything else like that. So they have it's only 50, only $50 a year, you know, so you get the access to this stuff. So we have the biography of Stanislavski, and I think also for example is an article on world literature like that and so on. So some very related things which very easily you can connect to this, and you can start relating to outside sources, universities and stuff like that. David Haberman is from the University of Indiana. Okay, that's about it then. Okay. What else we got? Okay, yeah. And then we're also going to go to Stanislavski. Dramatic literature. Dramatic literature is the one from the Britannica. Dramatic literature. Yeah. And then one more biography we have is Peter Brook. You know Peter Brook? He's, again, like one of the contemporaries. He's a little retired now, pretty much, but in the modern world, he's one of the biggest, you know, dramatists. I mean, you got Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, okay, you know, but in terms of, like, he for example, All and Everything by Ouspensky, one of the two, and Gurdjieff is his disciple. It goes something like that, one is before the other, yeah. Anyway,
the first one, Ouspensky, is very famous. The second one, I don't know.
Gurdjieff was his follower.
Okay.
So Ouspensky wrote three things, and one of them was called Meetings with Remarkable Men, and a big classic. So he did a whole drama of that. But he also did a whole drama of the Mahabharata, which we'll see at the very end. Peter Brook.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he was a great. Have you seen it?
No, but Shamananda talks about it all the time.
I saw that.
I have it here. If you want a copy, a soft copy. But it's incredible. He did it for Westerners. Mm-hmm. Indians didn't like it. Some didn't like it. It's not for Indians. He said, because he's telling this is for Westerners, and they go click 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 click. Oh, yeah. Because he puts things in a way that. And we get it stuff. And you can, once you go through all this, you begin to see it, the techniques that are being used to create the effects and stuff like that. So, his biography, if you go to a theater class, I know Peter Brook, I've seen his work, I know his biography. Viola Spolin, you know, she's the in between there. She's called the grandmother of improvisational theater, you know. The Second City was started by her son, like that, and so on. Peter Brook, Charles Poland, Konstantin Stanislavski, and it's easy to read their biographies and stuff like that. And then you have David Haberman, you have a very authoritative, you know, background in terms of Western qualifications and stuff like that to go to any university, in terms of drama theory and all this kind of stuff. So any questions? Kind of use these, introduce them so everybody feels familiar with them, you know, likes them. Yeah. Okay? Okay. Flip chart. Slide chart. Okay. So today, then we come back to David Haberman. Okay. Which probably means something in German. Vermont. Yeah. And he's from the University of Indiana, which is a very respectable university. You look on the Wikipedia, Google, whatever like that, Yahoo search, you'll find several David Habermans. He's the professor. And his page is there at the university, like that, and so on. We recorded here, it's okay, we'll let it out. it appears that because before, in an academic circle, if you said Prabhupada, if you said Prabhupada is a stupid demon, you know, it didn't matter. The P word was just too much. That was just even if you totally rejected him, if you mentioned the word, you were out. You know, it was just like when the rabbit's being chased by the fox, and finally he can't get away, he just closes his eyes and said, there is no fox. So in Western scholarship, talking to people who are involved in this, you know, Srila Prabhupada was such a terrifying figure for these people, like that, that finally they just close their eyes and say, there is no Prabhupada. And it's just like that, you know. And so it doesn't matter if you say, you know, I hate Prabhupada or I love Prabhupada, it doesn't matter, just there is no Prabhupada. You see? Yeah,
And how come Tamalakrishna Maharaj did his PhD thesis on him?
And how come it took 11 years before Krishna released it? Because people weren't ready for it. That's my thesis, and people say, oh, you're right on it, Swami. Yeah, to me, that's a super, super discussing with Maharaj. This would definitely be a part of our curriculum here. His book establishes, his thesis was that Prabhupada is a theologian, not just a clever group leader of hippies, like that, so on. And it does it. I mean, it's a very rigorous view of the whole thing like that. And so it seems that now, because Prabhupada's disciples are in many places like that, and they're playing the game okay, they haven't disturbed the economics, they haven't disturbed the prestige thing, they haven't made us think too much, you know. Okay, so, well, who is Prabhupada? Yeah. So it's like that now. It's just like, so this book is like, you know, Maharaj's book is totally academic, totally authorized, you know, thesis on this point, establishing that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is a theologian. Can be looked at as a very rigorous theologian with a few cultural adjustments to the standard, but we shouldn't be so xenophobic that we're not going to be able to tolerate other cultures. Okay, so that book is like, you know, if you know it, it's extremely important in our whole development like that. They want to make, you know, make our theology degree much more Hare Krishna, teaching our books. Mm-hmm. Well, your books are just your cult thing. No. Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You know? So his book is like extremely important contribution to establishing with that basis, okay. And all the Prabhupada's books, you haven't got to go through and justify everything he says, because it's in proper perspective, and it's authorized, it is, by the standard is. So, you know, it's not a part of this class, but that book is extremely important. So David Haberman, it appears that he was a person looking for the truth. You actually don't become a theologian unless you're looking for the truth, because there's no money in it, you know. So I gave him a theologian. And Mother Govindadasi, right, knew him personally, and stuff like that. She's the one when we first grew Tulsi. You know, she published a book. She says Govindadasi has grown Tulsi. Mm-hmm. One of the maybe two people mentioned, maybe three, four, all of Prabhupada's books. So I met her. She knows him as a person like that and so on. And he was kind of like, as far as I can understand her descriptions, a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, like Maitreya Muni. Like he really is attracted to devotion and everything else, but he really thinks also, you know, one of his ideas was that all the things that are being described about Krishna and everything else are kind of like a subtle psychological world, you know, it's being created by people and you can go there and stuff like that. Yeah, that's kind of like that idea. It's one of his ideas. He's also going on like that. So he did his PhD thesis on Raganuga Bhakti and was published as a book as called Acting as a Way of Salvation, something like that, so on. And then he did the Braj Mano Parikrama, which takes, you know, it takes about around Vrindavan, takes 1 month to do it. And it's an incredible experience, you know, if you ever get a chance to do it. People say it's the postgraduate experience of the Gauramandal Parikrama. You know, it's longer walks, everything else. It's just, it's heavy. And you just, in the beginning, you just gotta, you know, pray to Radharani that I'm gonna do this. And if you, you know, get her mercy, you can do it. You know, otherwise, well, it's tough, you know. Yeah. So anyway, four German infantry soldiers, devotees, they did it 1 year, and they said, if you can do this, you can be a German infantry soldier, if you can do the Braj Mano Parikrama. So one of my aspirants was a Green Beret from Spain, you know, came out of that, and I asked him, is that true? And he said, well, we did stuff more intense, but on a prolonged basis, no, nothing ever more like demanding physically than this Parikrama. Yeah, half the time there's no bathing facilities, everything else. You go in the bushes to do everything like that. So the first few days, the girls are still maintaining their eyebrows, whatever it takes like that, you know, and they're dressed as neat. But after about 4 days, all the women start looking like German infantry soldiers. Like that. And just like, forget the eyebrows, forget that. Just walk. Yeah. And so you know, all the passion goes away. It's for Sandha Bhakti, it's incredible because you get off this, you know, you get down into the dirt in Vrindavan. You start dreaming about dirt, you're dreaming about rope, you know, it's just new stuff. Hari Sori, after 3 days, his hands were shaking. He said, this is because every day I'm on the computer for about, you know, 2 hours, and so my hands are going like this withdrawal. And it was like, you know, you go through this kind of withdrawal, and you don't go back every night to Vrindavan. Now they've arranged that you can go back to the good Krishna Balaram guest house. But if you actually do it, you just walk, you set up your tent, you know, the tents are there, and they're Indian tents. Everybody packed together, and the next day you walk, and you live in Brijbasi's houses, farmhouses, with the cows staring at you. So it's a real, you know, it's a real intense inundation in Vrindavan. You know. And then when you're reading the works of the Goswamis along with it, wow, you know, incredible. You know. So anyway, he did that at Parikrama and stuff. And it's a very good book. Krishna Kshetra gave it to me. It's, you know, all of his books are, well, at least the Acting as a Way of Salvation, I don't know. I didn't read that, but I think probably it's also a very good book, like interesting, easy to read. And especially if you've gone to Parikrama, it's just, you know, seeing his perspective, you know, he at least in that book, I would say he tried to talk with some sadhus who were sitting there and talking and stuff, and they just were kind of like not letting him get in. So it's kind of like, he was just, couldn't quite get into the internal aspect, but he had experiences which were just beyond belief, like that and stuff like that. You know, so going to too much anyway, but that's Journey Through the 12 Forests, is that book, very good book. Then he translated Bhakti Rasa into Sindhu. And since then, he says he's gotten into also into Varanasi and especially into ecology. And so Radhika says it looks like he took initiation in the Nimbarka Sampradaya, you know, that stuff. Because he did the Parikrama one time with them. For them, their supreme goddess in Nimbarka Sampradaya is Jamuna, like that. They look at her as like the supreme goddess and look at Radha. So that's why judging him, you know, he's kind of, it depends, like he's not like a bad guy, maybe a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. The thesis in the introduction, there's some points there which we definitely probably would disagree with, like his perspective on the thing like that. But in general, it's just a fantastic, you know, introduction to the whole book like that. Okay. I guess we could take a break now? Mm-hmm. Something now? Okay. Take a break now? Yeah, because it's quarter as well. And then we come back and we'll start talking about his thing in more detail.
Do you want me to bring a net of devotion from the library?
Well, we need it eventually.
Okay.
The Waves of Devotion, she has two copies, and I have a PDF file. Mm-hmm. And then, what is it? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the introduction, she has a PDF file, and I have a copy. She has a better PDF file, and she has the book. The book is like $135, his translation. Yeah, so these things, they have published very few copies, so they're expensive, you know. Mm. But usually what happens at that level, you actually sell it to the libraries. You know, and very few specialists like that, and that's because it costs so much to print, you know. And now everybody's going to online publication and stuff. Mm. So whatever, you know, you pay PDF, you know, so.
So you don't need in-class book?
No, because I have it here in my office, my database. But in terms of yourselves, because you're going to need these things, for example, your reading assignment is going to be David Haberman's introduction. She has PDF. I guess she was going to send it to your drop boxes. I'm not sure what the system is here, the drop box. Mm-hmm. But I also have it here. And so if, you know, you have your computer, I could just transfer it right there, and I could give you thumb drives of it. Mm-hmm. If you promise to return my thumb drives on fear of something. Being chased by demons. Okay, so take a break. Take a break. Watch out for the court.
So we are back at what time?
Huh?
We are back at what time?
12 o'clock, right?
Okay.
In 15 minutes. Okay.
You want to leave it to me?
Huh? To me? I have two. I've got a transfer for you right now. Hey Krishna, hey Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Maharaj, may I ask something?
I guess so, yeah.
I was a little shy to ask, but you know, these online resources about this improvisation for the theater.
Yeah.
Which you mentioned.
I gave them a copy, so they should have a new copy of it, the book. It's like, you know, a super theater classic, yeah.
In the library, you mean?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I also have a PDF file of the first edition, you know.
Oh.
And so then it says, okay, it's okay, it's fine. But then this later edition, they just expanded the number of games, I think, basically, and changed a couple terms like that. But other than that, the basic thing in terms of drama theory, and everything else is there in the original one. That's a PDF file, which I can give to you right now. Mm-hmm. How much space do you have here?
Well, this one is 16 gigabyte.
Okay. Recycler. No, removable disk D. Okay. Okay. You can give your disk a name. You can give it a name if you want to. Like that. Okay. Okay. Hare Krishna, okay, and you have 12.9 gigabytes free, okay, so let's start down with the folder, where is that, there, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Ah, there it is. Okay. Okay. Okay, but B-R-S. What are you supposed to send to me? And then, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, please.
Krishna Chaturmukhi was just giving a seminar on Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he mentioned that Rupa Manjari and Ananga Manjari, they are jiva tattvas.
Yeah.
I found it interesting.
Yeah. I never heard it before.
What? So
I never heard it before, but why not? Yeah.
I was thinking that they are...
Oh, Shakti Tattva.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never heard it before. But I know, why not? Still do the job. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but that means that they can also fell from the spiritual world? Is it? That means they can still fell from the spiritual world?
I guess so. But the thing is, the word fall is used in two senses. One is accidental fall down, and the other is intentional, you know, fall, intentional mistake. And that probably uses it that way too. Because Mars Bharati was in the level of Baba.
Yeah.
And it said because of previous karma, he fell down, attached to the deer. And the purport probably says no. Isn't impossible at that level. The level of Baba, you can't have an accidental fall down. It's because you're offensive. Like that. Yeah.
I mean,
and that's possible anytime.
I mean, but for me it's interesting because Rupa Manjari is just a servant of Lalita. If something would happen with Rupa Manjari, what Lalita will do?
It means we can also get the same position. How nice.
Yeah.
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 That's the whole double-edged thing. It's terrifying that we can fall down because we want to enjoy. I don't want to suffer. It's still personal desire. Mm-hmm. Like that. But the other side of the point is that Krishna himself can't control us. Right? And so if we can do things that even Krishna is amazed at, because we're very free will. He doesn't know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're little, but it's like a little toy or something like that. You know, so that's what it is. So Krishna is like, plays with us like that and stuff. He doesn't know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So we have free will. We're always increasing. Okay. Looking here for why this is so big. Because I haven't got size to transfer everything. My documents. Where am I? My documents. American Bhagavad Curriculum. Graduate School. Yeah. Nectar of Devotion 2, there it is. Okay, we're back here again. Okay. Oh, that's it, yeah, 24. Well, that's that big. 24 megabytes is improvisation for the theater. Okay. So David Haberman's introduction. We will transfer. Okay. Okay, done. And then... Actually, I should just click these. Brooks? Okay. Click. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Ah! Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Should be okay. Seven files, copy, okay.
We also have the file of the Nectar of Devotion 2 course, the entire one.
Yeah, it's there too. Yeah, okay. Okay. Removal disk D. Eject. No, remove. Where is this? Collapse. Okay. Yeah. Eject. There we go. Okay. Now you know everything. Computers will create a class of people who appear to know many things, but actually will know nothing.
Could I ask you for that PowerPoint presentation of Prabhupada books?
Oh, all right. Okay. This is. I have a name for your desk.
MKDD.
Huh?
MKDD.
Yeah, I say it as a name. And we go through four properties, and you have 856 megabytes free. Okay, no problem. So we create a new folder. Okay, which we'll call, where is it? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay. And then go over here. Oh, regret. Okay. Hare Krishna.
So you're not teaching this course from next year?
Huh?
If I understood correctly, you're not teaching this course from next year?
I should. Then somebody else, I'll come as like, you know, just a, what's the word, like a advisor. Yeah,
oh.
Somebody else will teach it.
Oh.
Yeah. Because graduate school. Graduate? Yeah. Okay. There we go. Okay. Peter books. Oh, don't open. Improvisation for the theater, introduction to Haberman, NODO2, poster, Rupata Modern, Stanislavski, okay. Waves of Devotion, okay. Control click. This all goes to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Mm-hmm. libraries, documents, ABC. It's probably going to be under kindergarten. Hell card, Jabba Joe. Okay. Let's try primary. It's also not. No, there it is. Yeah, Bhaktivedanta Library. 23rd July. Okay. Yeah. I got this. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. Yes. We have a soul chant. Hare Krishna. Okay. Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Prasadam Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
So, I guess we go then to David Haberman. And we go to, where is that? It's under graduate school. Nectar of Devotion. And then David Haberman, Improvisation and Theater. I have two of these. Okay. This is terrible. This Windows 8 operating system is horrible.
Really?
Yeah. they tried to do is, because you have the, you know, you push things around on the screen, they made the screen the same as the tablet and the same as the telephone.
Yeah.
But it's just like it doesn't work here and stuff, and finding stuff. And so they write the manual, they say, you know, everything, say, give me back my desktop. You know, they say, okay, well, here it is. So most people go right back to that. So it has a PDF reader. And this is what the one, this, I guess which one I gave you. Anyway, this is the book, Improvisation for the Theater, by Alice Fuller. It's the wrong one. Okay. So you go up here and you grab it, pull it down, it goes away. Okay, and it comes back to this confusing thing here. What I want, introduction to Haberman. Okay. So here we have this thing. Okay. And this is the one I have. The table of contents is not on it. No, so the one that you may get from the librarian may have more details. Maybe better to get it from her. But basically he has, Yoga of Divine Emotions. So you can kind of skip over that. Basically it's divided into Yoga of Divine Emotions. He's talking about what is Bhakti Rasa Mita Sindhu, kind of like that. Then he has Rupa Goswami and his times, which is incredible historical perspective like that. And what was happening, what is the whole political ambience, you know, Muslims, and it's worth reading. Okay. Then the second part, I think, is called, look a page down, Bhakti and Nukhani. Okay, then you have Bhakti. So anyway, our reading assignment will be Rupa Goswami and His Times, which is on page XXXI. And again, I don't know why these idiot guys... You know, which translates into English as 31. You know, but XXXI, Rupa Goswami and His Times. Little is known for certain about the early years of Rupa Goswami's life. Footnote. It seems almost certain, however, that he was born sometime between... Oh, my God. He was born sometime between 1470 and 1490. Yeah, the earlier date being more plausible. Footnote. Okay, and he gives a very nice description, you know, and I don't think you'll find anything really contrary to Prabhupada's books or devotional perspective, but maybe more depth. And then he'll go all the way through all this stuff. What happened here? I think I missed it here. Okay, so that's only about, what is it we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 pages, okay. I would say go through that, and you know, he gets a lot of history of Barbar and Mughal emperors and this kind of stuff, and it's kind of interesting to see what's happening. Was there, and you hear about them, and Humayun, he was a Shah Jahan's son or something like that, and he fought all these like medieval battles, which basically means you got, you know, people trying to kill you with a sword, and you're trying to kill them with a spear, and you know, it's like this right there in the end. It's like who could has the 1 ounce more strength than the other guy, so you can stick a sword through a guy's throat. You know, so this like he lived through all that. He died by falling off the steps of his library. Yeah, and the library is still there. You can go there. It's not very big. It's about, you know, about the width of this building, and kind of circular. And it's one room, you know, and the steps are about like, maybe about like, a little bit more than this, 1.5 times this distance, and you're falling off. It's really suspicious. You know, the guy lived through all this stuff, the guy falling off the steps of his library. It's more like an assassination with somebody just kind of broke his neck and covered it over. But anyway, it's just, you know, the whole ambience, everything is happening. So it's a very good history of that time. And basically, the Muslims were going here and there, invading and this kind of stuff. And amongst themselves, they had a lot of competition amongst themselves, which is very, very traditional. Anybody with half a brain in his head, which George Bush didn't have. it was in the United States, it was this television show of all the stupid things George Bush would say, and it became so frightening they stopped doing it, because it was just like, you know, for example, one time there was this big controversy. The French were saying that Americans were just too aggressive in business. They were just like too harsh and stuff like that. So President Bush was defending American businessmen, and he said, "Why, these French people don't know about business. There's not even a word for entrepreneur in the French language." It's a French word. And it's okay. Oh God, he's a president, you know. Yeah, one command, you could kill, you know. But in 45 minutes, if something like, you know, 900 million people will be dead within 45 minutes, the guy pushes one button, one phone call. Oh, God, you know. Life is like a water in the lotus, you know, thing like that. So anyway, but he didn't know, his advisor didn't tell him, when he invaded Iraq or whatever it was, that the Muslims there had two very major groups which just, you know, did not get along, Sunni and Shia, whatever it is. And so anyway, a little bit of political thing is not going to invade the place. They're going to start like supporting, you know, the guys to create things like that. Didn't do it. So the Muslims, you'll see, always very much, there was very clearly, they were fighting each other or who's going to be in control. And right, and the capital, you know, was Delhi, like that. And Delhi and to the south. Biamatura. Agra. Yeah. And Agra, as far as I understand, half of it's within Mathura Mandala. You know, so it's kind of in and out. And there was no river, no road. The main road was created by the
Muslims?
British. The Grand Trunk Road. You know. And before, you can see drawings of ox carts and horses, and it was, you know, it was like a regular kind of road. Now that's the one that still exists. You know, it still exists. I think it goes all the way to Lucknow, you know, to Naimisharanya, the Grand Trunk Road. So it came from Delhi, and it went down to through Mathura to Agra. But that wasn't there. I mean, maybe some pathways and so on at that time. So the main way of transportation was for carrying gigantic loads of rice and everything else.
Ox cart?
No.
Or trains?
No. Donkeys? No. The Jamuna.
Yep. Yeah.
So that was it. You imagine it was. And then now they actually had come south from where it is, somewhere up north there, they cut it off into irrigation canals. And there's this thing that none of the water in the Jamuna is actually from the Jamuna. It's all sewer water from Delhi. So anyway, what's going on? But because in Delhi it's actually a pretty good sized river, you know, when it gets to Mathura, it's divided in two branches. Before, it's already been divided for agricultural canals. But it's coming down and it goes, they cut it off to the west. So it's still within Braja. And the Braja and Prakriti pass over it. It's a really fast moving, clean thing like that. And probably they especially wanted to discourage people, so they started contaminating and polluting all these sacred rivers. Yeah. So what passes through Vrindavan now is just kind of like a very small part of what even exists now, but to speak of before when there probably was more water in it. So very much it was a navigable, you know, seaway with water course with barges and everything else. And, you know, you've got to carry so much stuff from Delhi to Agra, so you go in the Jamuna and have your barge and stuff. You know. And then Rupa Goswami's temple, which temple is it?
Madhavan.
No, it's not. It's not Sanatana Goswami.
You've been
there, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Govindaji.
Oh. Yeah,
yeah. Because you go around to the backside of Vrindavan, there's the 84 sannyasis, you know, samadhi thing there. And then you go up and there's the South Indian temple there. You can see this one South Indian temple that's there. Probably mentions in the Krishna book. And if you look up from that big road, there's right up there. It's just like kind of a nice broad two-block thing going up here. There's a temple like that. You know, with the top five stories gone or something like that.
Oh, it's the ones that cut off.
Yeah. So, Prabhupada talks about one Hanuman deity. He says, that's a very nice Hanuman deity. It's one purport. And he used to be next to Gopal, but when Gopal left to become Sakshi Gopal, he moved next to Govindaji. So very old, that means, you know. And so I try to find this, because it probably emphasizes it. It's a little adventure. So Narada Raman Goswami told me, he said, yeah, he's right next to you. Go up, up as you're going up. There's one street before you get there. You turn right, he's there. So I went there, and there's Singhapur Hanuman. And he's like carved out of a solid stone like that. And the story was that when Aurangzeb, who wasn't an atheist, he was a very fanatical, you know, Muslim, like that. He read the Quran like seven times or something like that. So he was insulted by the opulence of this Hindu temple and sent his guys and his soldiers to protect the work when they were just tearing it apart. So if you go inside now, you'll see all these beautiful, you know, lila things. All the faces have been knocked off like that. Yeah. And he goes right back 500 years. Dr. Bhattopadhyaya, our historian friend, came with us in this parikrama. He starts nosing around. He finds like this inscription over in the corner in the shadows and says all these things on it. Like, wow. You know, it was really incredible going with him on the parikrama. Because it was historian, we identifying the ages of the bricks and stuff. You know, wow, incredible. Yeah. So anyway, we got there. And then, it was about Rupa Goswami or after him. And really incredible temple, of course. But at that time, the Jamuna was just down the slope. You know, right in front of it, going right by there. And so Aurangzeb's guys came. And they started tearing it apart. And the people, of course, were dying and crying and everything else, but these soldiers were there, to keep the, you know, the workmen protected. But finally, the story is that Hanuman couldn't handle it anymore. It's kind of the point, so he just came right out of the stone and gave the hunkar his big roar, like that. And then the workmen all look over, and all the monkeys in Vrindavan are coming, and led by this monkey. Nobody had seen such a big monkey in Vrindavan before. He was like, you know, it was usually about like this big, maybe like that. This guy was maybe three times that big. He wasn't a gorilla, but he was like good size. He was just leading everybody else. So they went right up the side of the thing and started biting the workmen and pushing them off, and the guards couldn't handle, like, you know, this kind of attack like that, you know. So they all ran away. And then Aurangzeb figured, okay, some kind of black magic or something. We got five stories, that's good enough. Leave it at that. You know? Because I couldn't figure out why he didn't destroy the whole thing. You know? So the story. He's right there. You can go see him. Pay your base and destroy him. Yeah.
Could you say one more time, where is he?
As you're going up towards the temple, there's the main road down below, and there's one road that goes off to the right before you get to the temple. You just turn right there, and it's right there. It's just like half a block.
Like Hanuman Temple.
Yeah, it's right there. Singapore Hanuman. Not very big. Yeah. So many adventures. So that was his temple and his deity. And the Muslims were running around this way and that way. And as you read this, it'll explain that he gives before, when Rupa Goswami was there and everything else, I think it was the Moguls. Moguls had taken over. But before them were the Lodis. And he says Lodi is being presented as a horrible bigot guy and a destroyer of Hindus and everything else. If you talk to the Indians, they'll say the same thing. But he said, but the only documents we have were written by the Moguls, you know. So if you read in America about Adolf Hitler, you're going to get one very specific view about who was Adolf Hitler.
I'm sorry, I don't know who the Lodis, who are they?
Lodis?
Yeah.
They're the dynasty before the Moguls.
The Moguls are?
Yeah, the Mogul dynasty. You'll read all this.
Oh, okay.
The Moguls were the Muslims. They were the guys that created the whole political ambience and everything they were talking about, you know. And under which the book was written, because it's the same way the Bhaktivedanta College, well, it's under a certain thing, and why didn't they have more buildings? Well, the government doesn't allow this and that, and so on, you know. So it's really nice. A lot of things become clear in terms of the nature of devotion and stuff, when you got the political perspective like that. So he was going on like this. So David Haberman makes this point that maybe Lodi wasn't such a bad guy. The Lodis, because it was during their reign that all this stuff was going on, and so many people were coming, all this intellectual communication between Muslims and Hindus was going on, and different sampradayas were developing, and so if they were so, like, you know, horrible, then how could this have gone on like that? Also at this time, because this is, you know, horseback, foot, you know, horses like her. You know, rich man's item, Shephi's thing. So most people, and also to not even roads, it's like pathways and villages, and very primitive, very simple. This is no highways like that, you know. And so what is this? There's no sign. No, this is so-and-so. You know? So in the midst of all of this, Mathura Mandal is about like the size of a county. Say in America, you say county. Who's in charge of a county? A duke, a baron, or a count?
Count.
Okay, let's say that. Okay. And the duke is in charge of is a harder one.
District.
No, a duchy. A duchy. So usually there'll be several counties within one duchy. And then a duchy is earl, and you get the king. In the English way it goes. Then goes the king, earls, maybe a few people, then the dukes, and then the counts. And then you've got a baron. And the baron is in charge of his manor house, his fields, his few you know, constables, you know, so on. So within the county of Mathura Mandala, there was one baron who was so tough and everything else that he maintained his whole position, you know, very well. And nobody conquered him. And he was responsible then for funding a lot of the things that were, you know, we developed. I think he was in Dig, in the Brahma and the Parikrama. His fort's still there. I'm sure that fort's in the time of British. You look at the thing, and it's tough, you know, it's like, to conquer this guy, you know, we're going to lose a lot of soldiers. So the guy's paying tribute anyway. Okay, keep your independence. Do what you want to do. Like that. So it's like that, you know, feudal culture. So he was funding a lot of these temple constructions and stuff like that. And at this time also, for stability, the Muslims were making alliances with Hindu kings to fight against their own brothers, cousins. And so they had especially alliance with Maharaj Man Singh, was like the from Jayapur, like that. And so he was the one who funded the Rupa Goswami's temple and stuff like that. And also Dr. Bhattacharya, reading this inscription, he also gave a endowment that every day they could offer like 150 kilos of rice that could be cooked. Some, like, you know, robust amount. So you can imagine this, and you go there, you sit there and just chant, sit there, I play my flute, sit there, you sit there, all these realizations, you know, that all before all these blank walls, all the architraves, they had flower vases in them. You know, probably every day they had fresh flowers put in there, like changing colors. Today we're going to use these colors, right? So all these flowers like this and that, you know. And all there were festoons hanging with cloth, especially for the festivals. You can imagine with Jamashtami. Okay, now we're going to go back to the Jamashtami with Rupa Goswami, that for Radha Govinda. Wow, unbelievable. It was all forest then. There were deer coming and looking out of the bushes. Yeah. And then just the Jamuna is just within, you know, walking distance down below. And so many different bands want to play, you know, for Janmashtami. And up above the second story, which you can't go in other places for the bands to sit and play. So many places for little lambs to be there. You can imagine what it was like. You know, unbelievable. And then, you know, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, on a hill. And this is where I think Astakalya Leela is, where Radha and Krishna are at the noontime pastimes. And the deities were discovered. They were much older, like that, the Radha Govinda. So, and then every day, you know, they had this program, or convention of cooking facilities. Every day they had like this rice and vegetables, of course, you know, almost for free. So you know, people with their barges on the moon are probably kind of figuring, like, you know, let's. That's, you know, plan the trip so we can end up at, you know, Radha Govinda temple for lunch. You know, and when we also too, it'll be nice aarti, kirtan, everything else. So you can imagine people docking and getting off and having prasad and the deities and going on, you know. You know, and also the top five stories have got to be the most beautiful, you know, the most fine like that and so on. So what do we lose, you know, in terms of, you know, what the thing must have been like that, surrounded by beautiful forests. I'm sure it was a cultivated gardens and, you know, you can imagine, wow, this is what it was. You know? And that's not imagining. If you go on chanting and stuff like this, then Rupa Goswami, maybe anybody else, they reveal to us, you know, what these things were. You see so many things, you know, details. But at any moment, yeah, the Muslims may flip out or somebody may get a little weird and come through and just ride their horses right into the temple and start spearing people, you know. So you had this ambience of like, you know, this is transcendence, but at any moment, birth, death, and disease, old age are there. So, you know, when Lord Chaitanya was there, was that time, the Muslims were attacking, so what's his name, Natji, had been brought down from the hill to be, you know, so Lord Chaitanya could see him like that. Might have been the Purusha deity, Natji. So it's like the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how they refer to the Muslims and things like that. Might have been the Puri was there. little bit before that. Yeah, it was very thick jungle at that time. And Govardhan was much, much higher, apparently. Because Rupa Goswami says, Raghunath Das Goswami says, all the Goswamis have left. I'm going to kill myself by jumping off Govardhan Hill. But if you look at Govardhan now, if you're going to kill, you have to jump off many times to do it, like jump off. it's not that. But that was just, 500 years ago. So it looks like we are amongst the last generation of people who are going to see Govardhan. You know, she's going to be within maybe, I don't know, maybe within 200 years, there's going to be no more Govardhan. You know, even now they do soundings for water. It's definitely where the Keshavardi says where Tamal Krishnamurti's property is. Govardhan is like maybe like 10 feet below the on the one side, and maybe 30, 40 feet other side, like that. So it's right under us, you know, there's dirt on top of it. But yes, it's already gone down. So you can do excavation like that and go down and find caves and temples. So that's the political history, and the Muslims, I think that's about it. So it's good to go through and get a little perspective on it, you know, and maybe take some notes, and, you know, and other than that, I think it's just, you know where it is, if you need it, you can go back, and it's a good history of what we're talking about. The second part, then, is the essence of rasa, a brief discussion of rasa theory. And the final part, then, is where he gives an overview of the book. Now, we're not going to read that, but it's really good because the terms, you know, Prabhupada gives one term, Dhananda Maharaj gives another term, he gives another term. And with all three of the translations, you actually get what the word actually kind of means. Because these are very difficult terms to translate sometimes. So it's a nice summary. He gives like that analysis like that. So next then, okay, is the essence of rasa, a brief discussion of rasa theory. Rupa Goswami